Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Dr. Anna Dover, Director of Product Management at FDB, First Data Bank. She's responsible for a number of FDB's solutions and has worked as clinical decision support lead and in other clinical roles in pharmacy. She has a bachelor's and doctorate in pharmacy and has direct patient care experience as well. Anna, thank you for joining us today and welcome to Harlow on Healthcare.
Thank you for inviting me, David.
It is a pleasure. So First Data Bank, I know, FDB, I know as a drug database, but of course it's so much more than that. I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit about what FDB does and more about your role there as well.
Sure. Yeah. So you mentioned a drug database. We also provide a database on medical devices. And that database includes information to drive appropriate prescribing of medications, dispensing, as well as clinical decision support. So we really focus on providing the information caregivers need to guide care in a safe way to optimize outcomes for patients.
And so what does that include? I mean, I'm thinking, you know, package inserts, but that's just sort of a starting point as far as I would understand it. What other sorts of information work into the database and the tools that you're providing?
Yeah, so our data is leveraged across the healthcare continuum. So outpatient pharmacy, major retail, pharmacy retail chains use our data. EHRs, some of the largest ones on the market, embed our content. We are used by payers and PBMs, so in that insurance space as well. Recently, we were leveraged by Amazon and Alexa to provide medication information to patients in their homes. So that's really an exciting use of our data. It's not just in the nitty-gritty dispensing and for use by healthcare providers. We also provide content to promote appropriate medication adherence. So one of our products translates into 29 languages at an appropriate level for understanding for different ages and healthcare literacy levels. We're used in specialty pharmacies, and the list goes on and on. But yeah, it's pretty exciting. We've been around for a long time, over 40 years. We continue to innovate and expand into new areas to provide that really important information.
Great. So I'd be interested to understand what are some of the ways in which you're doing that. And I understand that you're responsible for a number of products. I wonder if you could explain a little bit about what the different products are that you work on and what they do and how they reach clinicians and patients.
Sure. So in my role, I focus quite a bit on the clinical decision support side as a pharmacist who's practiced. I know the challenges associated with it. I experienced significant alert fatigue just when I practiced pharmacy. And so what I work on are solutions to help minimize that fatigue. So one tool is a customization tool. The way our content performs can vary based on the care setting, you know, what that end user of our content may need for their practice pattern can vary. So it's a tool to help them customize it to their specific need for their organization. I also work on a newer product that we created where now that we live in this space where so much patient information is available, whether through an EHR or an app, there are specific things about the patient that are very important to provide good decision support. So it could be lab information. It could be demographic information with age and gender. We can calculate risk scores and provide what we call a patient-first approach to that decision support. So bringing in the patient context, where they are in the healthcare continuum, and that additional information that's available to provide really meaningful alerts at the right place in the workflow. And then another product that I work on is an analytics product that is designed to help organizations understand how decision support is performing. So is it alerting a provider at the right time and the right place? to ultimately improve that patient outcome and prevent any adverse drug events or other safety issues as well.
So you're looking at not only particular medications or devices that are being considered for prescription or already have been prescribed, but you're looking at a much more holistic view of a patient in that case. So that seems to be a different kind of data than maybe what your company had been looking at traditionally. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, absolutely. It's really an exciting time. I think, you know, we call it patient first because when you think about traditional medication decision support, you're looking at the active medications and drug that's being prescribed. And it's almost binary. What we're doing now is saying, what's going on with the patient and how might the medications be impacting that or causing it, consolidating the information and conveying it back. So that end user of the content, that physician, pharmacist, they can see everything that relates to it. It's not just looking at the drug that's being prescribed. It's looking at everything that could be causing or participating in that.
Right. That's fascinating. It's really, this is one more example of sort of the confluence of so many streams within healthcare and healthcare data and sort of the blurring of lines and functions across different parts of the healthcare ecosystem. I mean, sometimes we talk about payviders, if you will, as more payer organizations take on clinical management roles and as more clinical delivery systems take on financial risk. I'm wondering if you can say something about how you see this sort of new role for FDB fitting into these other aspects, these other parts of the healthcare ecosystem.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. So we started initially in that kind of provider hospital space because in the EHR, there's a lot more of that data consistently available currently. We're innovating on a newer product now that's designed for that outpatient pharmacy space. So, you know, you have to think about when it's data rich or data poor, our clinicians spend a lot of time thinking about what is available, how consistently it's available, so that we are not missing something important. And so our team has been heads down in that development for a while, where not only is it identifying that patient at risk with these predisposing risk factors, but providing messaging specific to that pharmacist end user, what their action should be, whether they need to contact the prescriber. So that's an exciting time. And I only see that growing into that payer space. I think our payer customers are already using a lot of our content because it's more than medications. We can pile information about indications for them, disease states. You know, we have a wide variety of concepts and data points that we provide. So I just see us continuing to grow because the healthcare continuum is what the patient travels in. And so the patient is the same, even though the setting changes. And so that information, hopefully over time, can continue to grow and follow the patient. I mean, that's what's so exciting about the population health space, right?
Right.
It's good to see that financial incentive to make it about outcomes and following that patient all the way through to identify the barriers to help them have the most appropriate care and improve and grow in health.
I don't know if it gets into this level of the ecosystem, but so many of the financial arrangements among healthcare enterprises are risk based or value based, and it just occurs to me that maybe that is something that would be relevant for your company as well. I don't know if it is.
Yes,
to have a sort of a value based financial arrangement with a customer.
Well, we don't have a value-based arrangement, but our content is leveraged in that population health space. So we curate value sets. We're used to identify patients that may have adherence issues to help appropriate medication regimen evaluation and identifying those that may be missing appropriate medication regimen. So while we don't have that type of financial arrangement, we absolutely help support those that do, whether it's in the hospital setting or the payer setting.
Right. That makes sense. So I understand that you also work with some intermediary organizations, if you will, that are maybe providing services to members of health plans or patients of integrated delivery systems. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to what sorts of organizations you're connecting with in that front.
We work with a lot of different types of vendors in the space, many vendors, I'd say. One company that's pretty interesting right now in this space is AspenRx. They're using our content in a really interesting way to help with medication therapy management. I think they bill themselves as like an Uber plus match for medication therapy management, where they are identifying based on geography, the patient's conditions, the most appropriate pharmacist to help them with that type of service. So that pharmacist can leverage our content to understand the patient and identify any potential risks, as well as help them optimize their regimen for adherence or, you know, identify any barriers. And they're also using our content to identify cohorts of patients. So very often a patient may not have a diagnosis on their record, but you can infer with our content likely diagnoses based on the medications that are active on their regimen. So identifying a diabetes patient based on some of their medications, and then taking it the next step to identify the drugs that they should also be on to prevent further deterioration in their condition or other comorbidities that can happen.
And then where would those recommendations be surfaced? To a prescribing clinician rather than to the patient? Or how does that work?
Well, so in medication therapy management, what's exciting about it is that it's the pharmacist extending out to that patient and having that direct conversation and working with the patient. As a pharmacist, I think it's very exciting. You know, we've always been told we're the medication experts. And that was when I practiced in retail pharmacy many moons ago. That was one of my favorite things, was patient counseling. Medication therapy management goes even further and looks at that compilation of medications to identify potential problems, help refine it. Patients who need this very often have several medications that they take and will continue to take for quite a long time. The information surfaced to that pharmacist so that they can identify risks as well as identify opportunities to improve the patient's medication regimen.
If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Dr. Anna Dover at FDB. Anna, we were talking about MTM and the opportunities there for payers, for integrated delivery systems, but also for other entrants in the field and other layers, if you will, other kinds of services that create opportunities for patient counseling by pharmacists. One that we were just talking about, it seems to me, when we talk about another Uber of healthcare. There's a number of companies that bill themselves as the Uber of healthcare one way or another. But in this case, it sounds to me like the model is predicated on a current oversupply of pharmacists. Do you think that's a fair statement, at least in part here? And in your experience over time, I assume there are different points in time where there's oversupplies versus undersupplies of pharmacists across the U.S. generally. So are we in a period of oversupply? Do you see that as an issue, as an opportunity for the moment, as a potential problem down the road when things swing back the other way?
Yeah, it's a great question. When I was in pharmacy school, there was a major shortage of pharmacists. So that was quite a while ago. And it was something that for me, when I graduated from pharmacy school, the job market was really different than it is now. As a profession, we've continued to evolve. We moved to, where every pharmacist now has a doctorate. We continue to grow in our residency programs and acquire more knowledge. While there are many more pharmacy schools now than when I attended, and there may be what some may consider a surplus, I think we're also, as a profession, much more educated and well-trained to help in this space. It's a lot of learning and training and expertise. And I think as a professional, I think it's a great way for us as to reach out to patients and to own that piece. many care providers of different types, physicians, nurses. I've learned about different things with medications from them. But what that pharmacist brings is that focus on it and being able to really help them refine and get that best care for that medication and that patient.
Right. So I imagine that there's opportunities then for other data companies, other applications, other sorts of businesses to integrate with the data streams that you provide and tailor them for particular clinical uses or direct patient uses. Is that sort of a growth area for relationships that your company has with others at this point in time?
Yes, we continue to grow in that space. I think there's a lot of growth for us in kind of that consumer-facing market. As healthcare continues to move into giving the patient more understanding and control, it's an important place for us to be and provide that good information. You'll see we've actually expanded in the space with our, I mentioned the medication adherence product that, you know, translates into 29 languages. We're expanding in that space now to provide multilingual labeling. So we're actually providing the translations for that prescription vial. And it's exciting because we use our translators are all native speakers. So bringing that context in is very important, the context of the whole prescription instruction, because if you translate each word individually, it can sound nonsensical. So I think it's very exciting that we're moving into that space as well. So it's everything from dispensing out to that consumer facing on, as I mentioned, Alexa earlier. My daughter had fun with that one when I told her that we were on there and she could ask a question about a drug and hear that it was from FDB. So I think you'll hear more about us in that consumer space, which is exciting because typically in pharmacy, you may know about FDB, but it's not always known externally because it's such a kind of a specific data set and purpose that we serve.
What you're talking about is really surfacing a ton of information, but the challenge is to surface it in bite-sized pieces at just the right time in the right context. You spoke earlier about alert fatigue, and I'm wondering what you are doing to reduce alert fatigue for clinicians and whether that extends to the consumer space as well.
Yeah, so in that clinician space, the idea is, I mentioned customizing, so making sure that you know, you never want to alert someone that's doing what your organization wants them to do. So customizing to suit those specific clinical needs, say in your health system. So that's an important first step. Then pulling in that patient-specific data. So that's where the product I mentioned earlier, we're using things like their other diagnoses they have on that patient. If they're in an ICU or if they're in the emergency department, how old they are, other lab values that they may have. So that we only alert when the patient meets all of that criteria. So thinking about, it's very common in a patient with heart failure to have them on several medications that could potentially increase their potassium level. Well, very likely that physician has already checked the lab value before they add another one because they know the risk. Well, traditional medication decision support may surface an interruptive alert that's saying, hey, you'll want to keep an eye on this. Well, that's frustrating to the physician because they've already checked the lab value. So what we're doing is by providing this contextual alert, we can actually not alert if the patient's potassium level is normal. And then later on, after they've been on the regimen for a while or something changes, if their potassium level increases, then we can surface the alert, let the end user know or the physician know, and not only point out the drug that was added, but all of the other drugs and drug-drug interactions that could cause it or potentiate it. So it's very exciting. It's, I think, one of the challenges very often with alert fatigue too is that the alerts don't feel actionable. You don't have enough information. It's looking at maybe two drugs together or, you know, three different drug-drug interactions, but you really want to look at the whole regimen to decide, of all these things and these potentially additional ones, how do I refine this to take the best care of the patient and manage the problem? And then the third thing that we're really doing is focusing on bringing that data back in. You need to have that closed loop for good decision support and that kind of continual review and optimization of the content to make sure that you're not missing something, because evidence changes all the time. And so it can disrupt alerts that may have been functioning well, and you need to go back and refine it and revise it so that you can make sure that you're not fatiguing on something that's very important.
From where you sit, Anna, have you seen a change in the work over the past year as we've been living through the age of Corona? And do you see a change in the period of time ahead of us as we come out of that?
A change in alert fatigue or in healthcare in
general? No, more broadly.
Yes, I mean, change is constant, and especially now. I mean, what I'm hearing from customers and colleagues that are still practicing, you know, healthcare systems in particular have been hit hard by the pandemic, some worse than others financially. And it's been challenging, I think, to manage the volumes at times. A lot of them are doing some novel things to manage the financial challenges associated with it. You know, maybe having more remote work for those that aren't practicing directly clinically, which is a pretty interesting one. And then I also see it's been exciting to see pharmacists at the front line of vaccinations. And I'm excited to see what that does for our profession. I remember back in the late 90s, working with a group that was working on getting pharmacists vaccination trained. So this was very early. It was before it really became a certification. They were just starting it. And so to think back and look at where we are now, I think it's very exciting, and it makes sense, and it makes the vaccines more readily available. So I think that's very exciting. So that may change that impact of pharmacists in the community, even, you know, grow it even more. And I think what's happened is a lot of other important organizational priorities may have had to shift. And so it will be interesting to see how that changes over time. You know, everyone's had to put on hold all of the things that they had planned to do to make sure that we can take good care of patients and vaccinate and continue moving forward. But there's a reason those things were important. So it'll be interesting to see how organizations can recover and pull those other organizational priorities back in.
Sure. It'll be very interesting to see how we continue into the next normal. If you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what is one thing in healthcare that you would hope or expect to find has changed drastically?
Well, I hope in 5 years that we have a much better understanding of alert fatigue. And we've been talking about it for well over a decade, but it's still very challenging. We don't have any consistent metrics. It's challenging to even figure out how to measure things, because it's so much more than just too many alerts or how someone responds to it. It's, you know, very often someone may get meaning from an alert because it reminded them of something to do later. So there are a lot of challenges there. And I think there's much that can be done, not just in understanding it, but in how we measure it. And hopefully in 5 years, we'll have some sort of mathematical equation that will help us know the tipping point. Like, when does the burden tip you over to where you can't see anything anymore? That could change. You know, that could change based on your setting or geography or the type of patient you're caring for. But it feels like with all this work we do with machine learning and artificial intelligence, that hopefully down the road, we can start to figure that out. So we can really make sure that we're figuring out the most important things to show when to drive that good care.
That sounds like something worth striving for. That reminds me of the question of how many individuals can you actually have, a relationship with at a given time. You know, people talk about having you know, a circle of 150 people plus or minus, versus looking online and seeing somebody's connected with. I look at some at my kids' Facebook pages, 10,000 friends. What does that even mean? Thank you for your time.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me.
You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.